Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host,
Mr. Ben Errington.
How's it going, Ben? You in?
Very good, Luke. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. You're coming to my house tomorrow.
I am. Against your will.
Well, half and half, I guess. No, it'd be cool if you came on like a Friday or something, so we could actually spend some time.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm just coming to your house to literally just sleep in a place.
Yeah,
and then that's it. I'm using you like the filthy bitch you are.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, wow. No, I do appreciate it, Luke. Thank you.
That's cool, man. It'd be interesting to.
I don't know if you noticed, but I am staying in your bed.
That's happened before. I remember one time, me and Kat was having maybe had a bit of a party or something, and you met Matthew Frew. He went to the toilet like about 12 o'clock ish or something. Went upstairs to the toilet, and by the time maybe 2-3 hours later, this was like student party, so you don't go to bed particularly early. Me and Kat got really tired before. Okay, let's go up to bed. And we went to get in bed, and Frew was just in our bed, just like asleep, just like just stolen
what
our
do
bed.
You do? Just commit to it and just sandwich him.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, just climbed in on top of him.
He was the meat, and you were the lovely loaf.
Yeah, the cob. Yeah. Come on, have you other horror guff? Have you seen anything?
We should rename this section of the podcast. Luke's other horror guff, because again this week I'm gonna say no, I haven't watched any horror guff, which is it's terrible, really, isn't it? I mean, I don't think I've watched all that much this week. It's been one of those weeks.
I haven't really, to be honest. What have you seen? Have you seen anything?
I've seen what have I seen? I've seen this film that we're going to discuss on this.
Okay,
on this,
okay, that's good. Podcast. That's good. Yeah.
I've started watching a series called The Deuce with James Franco. It's like an HBO thing about the beginning of the porn industry in the 70s.
Okay. Yeah.
Maggie Gyllenhaal, watched a couple of episodes of that.
Yeah.
That's not horror. That's not horror at all.
Disaster Artist. You talked about it last time. Maybe, I don't know.
Disaster Artist I'd mentioned last week. Yeah, I'm on my James Franco hype.
Yeah.
So maybe I should find a horror film with James Franco in. Do you know any?
No, I don't know if he's really into horror.
Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. Poor James.
No, I love Spider-Man 3.
It's not as bad as people say, I don't think. It gets a bad rap. Yeah.
I think it's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. But, you know, Venom's done a bit naff, but yeah.
Yeah.
What have you watched this week, Mr. Condor?
So yesterday I was a bit ill. We stuck on Gremlins. The number one, it's on Amazon Prime. And
I was a bit ill, so we stuck on Gremlins. Oh, please stick on Gremlins while I'm ill.
Someone come over and give you.
Kat was like, "Is this a Christmas film?" And then the first, like the opening song, is a song that just repeats the word Christmas about 30 times. It goes Christmas, yeah. might be a Christmas film. But I actually fell asleep about halfway through. But not because it's a bad film, because it's like such a sort of comfortable film. It's like the film you kind of stick on as a kid.
It's and, basically just like chicken soup for the soul.
And I woke up when they were in the cinema, like they're all watching the film, and they're all like singing "I Ho," the Snow White and Seven Dwarfs song.
I love Gremlins. I haven't seen it for years.
I didn't realize. I forgot how kind of brutal it was. Not to humans, but like they've kind of made these little creatures as like fodder to like destroy in various ways. Like they get microwaved. They get shoved in a blender.
I was always a little bit creeped out by Gremlins, I think, growing up.
Yeah.
Just the thought of something so cute becoming something so terrifying.
I always feel sorry for Gizmo. Yeah.
Yeah, Gizmo. I mean, he's got some of the greatest facial expressions in cinema history, I think.
Yeah.
He's got so much going on.
And his little song. I mean, that's probably what put me to sleep. His little song was like...
How does the song go again?
It's like, but it's a little bit wobbly. Oh, sorry, I got the dog going. Are you all right?
It's made me fall asleep. Little nap. I fell asleep.
And then what else did I watch? So I'm having a bit of a Cronenbergian Christmas, so I watched The Brood. I've never seen it before. Have you seen The Brood before?
No.
It's like if I think of like the word Cronenbergian, this is it. This is like full on, because it's weird, like really quite strange, just the way the characters talk and the whole, they've got a thing called psychoplasmic therapy or something like that. That I was like, is that a real thing for a long, long period of film? And then I found out it can't be real, because what it kind of turns into at the end is like it's so sort of gross. But
what's his late 70s? Oliver Reed.
He's really good in it. I was like, that's that dude from Gladiator. Fucking love that dude. And he was good.
of all the things.
It is a bit like there's a bit of a Don't Look Now sort of vibe in places, but it goes a different way of it. It's good. It's, like I said, it's this quiet. Like, it makes you feel a bit disturbed. Yeah, it's good. I recommend it.
Yeah. I think with my thing is that when I think of a horror film to watch, initially, my initial thought is, oh no, what if it's on the list? I don't want to watch it like early in the list.
Me too,
And then I have to watch it again, especially if I don't enjoy it, just for the podcast. I think that's why it's almost like a subconsciously sort of avoiding horror, but I think I should delve into some more. Because there's obviously, the list is, we're getting to a point in the list now where it's just pretty much stone cold classics.
Yeah. So today we're talking about number 18 on the list. Were you looking forward to this one? Like, because I always feel like these older ones, although I do, for the most part, I've enjoyed them more than I thought I was going to, but I always go into them with a bit of hesitation. Like, I'm going to have to work. I'm going to have to bring some concentration to this.
Yeah, so I think that's it. It's trying to bring some concentration onto it. And, you know, it can be a challenge at times. I think I'm a bit better now with these sort of films rather than... Before, I think I wasn't very open to it, and I was kind of like, oh, but boring. but now I'm gonna. But one bad thing I did was that when I turned this film on, I was like, oh, Match of the Day is starting at exactly the same time. I can multitask because it's a silent film, so I can multitask and I can watch both. I had one eye on each thing, and so I had to turn off one of them, so I turned off.
I'll be honest, I did whip the phone out a couple of times for this. Just because, I mean, it's not exactly The Raid. Do you know what I mean? In terms of pace? Like, you do get a fair few opportunities to get the phone out and have a little...
The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Kamimari. Not The Raid, Luke Condor.
But, so The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. So, do you want to tell us a bit about it, first of all?
Sure. So The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari is a 1920 German silent horror film directed by Robert Wien and written by Hans Janowitz and Karl Mayer. Considered the quintessential work of German expressionist cinema, it tells the story of an insane hypnotist who uses a somnambulist to commit murders. So the film features a dark and twisted visual style, sharp pointed forms, oblique and curving lines, structures and landscapes, and shadows and streaks of light painted directly onto the sets. What and version of this did you watch? Because I watched a version that was like remastered with various sort of color treatments and stuff.
That confused me because I watched this version of this on Amazon Prime, and it was because completely in black and white. But then I was looking at some screenshots, and there's like some like blue versions, some like yellow versions.
Yeah, I had some versions with color. How was the soundtrack for you as well?
Well, there's no audio. I mean, there's audio. There was like music, but I mean,
So obviously, there's no actual audio from the actual film itself. But in terms of soundtrack, I wonder when it was recorded. I need to probably look a little bit into that.
Why? What's on your mind?
It was like prog rock. It was like Rush in places. Really? It was like,
oh right. See, no, this one wasn't. This was, silent film music. Like it's kind of what you'd expect. Like Kat was listening. I had the sort of laptop sort of facing away from Kat. I was watching it, and she was like, "Are you still on the intro menu?" Because like she thought like it just sounded like that same music over and over again.
Yeah.
But
the music mine was like really ominous, droning, like
really
that's strange. Interesting. Like really strange, like to the point where I was just like, don't like it. And then other times it was just like shredding. It was just like guitars wailing and screeching, and just like loads of mental stuff going on.
It sounds like we've watched slightly different versions, so it'd be interesting to see what we made of it.
Yeah. But I liked it. If anything, for me, it made the process a little bit more interesting because also I felt like the music could direct. Because sometimes I was drifting away of it, especially when obviously someone's talking and you're waiting for a few seconds for the text to come up on the screen.
Yeah.
Saying what they're saying.
Yeah.
And when that's happening, you do kind of drift away a little bit. Do you know what I mean? You're like, oh, right, okay. I just got to wait a few seconds to finish talking.
What it'll do, they'll like, it'll say the sentence. And I think people used to read slower back then or something. Because the sentence is on the screen for about a minute.
10 minutes?
No. And you would have done like in like half a second. Like I'm 340 characters every half a second on Twitter. Like,
So I did kind of let the music direct me in that way, whereas there are some bits where I did kind of drift away, unfortunately. Sorry, it's my own doing. And then the music kind of helped me sort of get back into it. I realized when there was going to be a moment of like action.
You had like how many ad breaks?
Cues.
You had like about 30 ad breaks in the and just looking around to make sure a date and then back to the break.
Exactly. I was just staring at the wall at one point. No, as I said, Match of the Day was on, and at one point I was like watching it. You know what I mean? And I thought I've got to turn this off now, so I had to turn off Match of the Day, unfortunately.
Okay. We'll jump into it. But I mean, this is what Empire have to say about it. Arguably the first great horror film. Roger Wien's nightmarish German expressionist vision is all sharp edges and jutting angles. It remains a towering benchmark for those that followed, setting its playful story structure against a shadowy backdrop of duplicity, red herrings, and murder most foul. The story sees Werner Krauss as seemingly avuncular doc touting out a fortune-telling sleepwalker, Cesare or Caesar, I don't know how. These things, you don't know how to pronounce, you just have to make them up, at a town fair, where the ensuing death count hints that his career at Germany's answer to Mystic Meg may be short-lived. Boasting the first twist ending in cinema history, what follows off is a dark glimpse into a country's soul. It's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. On a little consensus thing on Rotten Tomatoes, it says...
Wait, what?
Yeah.
It's got 100%. What a bunch of squares.
I do kind of feel like it's one of those films where if you say, yeah, it's not that good, it's all right, like, you're instantly discredited because it's, but this is all about German dictatorship and authoritarianism. Like, people, like, have looked so much into it and it's got such, like, a revered status. Or it's just, a website error. I don't know. But it's got 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb.
Are you telling me that's better than Fast and Furious? I don't think so, mate. I'm joking. I hate Fast and Furious.
100%. I don't know.
100%. It's obviously, the main score from Rotten Tomatoes comes from critics, right?
Yeah, I don't know what a user critic is. I think the user one was still like 81%, so still pretty high, but not.
To be fair, like critics are going to be more like, you know.
Well, I think even the user score is going to be, people aren't going to be like whopping through Netflix and go, oh, what's this? Do you know what I mean? Like only people who are going to be interested in this.
Pretty much like film fans.
Yeah.
people who are interested in the history of film, or people who are doing some sort of weird project. Horror podcast where they watch every top 50 horror films.
50 or so horror films.
There's only going to be people like that, I guess. Yeah. But this was something that like I'd always been familiar with. Yeah. I'd seen the visuals from it, like loads, like all over the place. This and obviously Nosferatu, which was what year was that? Nosferatu?
Probably 1919-ish, I'm guessing.
1990? Yep, it came out in 1990. Not long after Terminator. But I mean, it is iconic, and in terms of like silent film, it definitely grabbed my attention in more ways than I thought it would. I'm not trying to be some sort of like a loser, but I did think I was watching a few minutes and I thought this is going to be tough. I'm really gonna have to knuckle down and strap myself in and put some matchsticks in my eyes to make sure I don't look away, even though I was.
Yeah, I know you, because I watched it up. I was supposed to stick this on earlier in the day, and I didn't. I think I just want to put Gremlins on, and then it was a little bit later in the day, and I was like, just stick it on, and then like see, you know, which puts that's the hardest thing is sticking it on, and then sort of seeing once the ball's rolling, it's easy to sort of watch it from there. But once I started watching it, it's surprisingly watchable. I was kind of surprised by how easy it is to. I mean, it's very easy to follow, but how easy it is to just look at the little weird visuals, weird little character. Like they say, expressionist cinema, but I don't think that they realise sort of how expressionist the faces are. Because they have to like overact everything to get the point across.
Ridiculous.
Oh, I'm so happy. And they go like this to the camera. But yeah, man.
Yeah. It's sort of like the dark makeup as well. Sort of like accentuates absolutely everything. Eyes. Teeth, just everything, and everything just, and because of that, everything looks creepy. It's almost like we've been so accustomed to these style of visuals in film, but presented in such a way that I kept thinking, when have I ever watched things that are like this style? And I thought, comedy, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
it makes
like
me think of Maya Bush, Habermas.
Exactly, I was going to say that. Either stuff like that, or parody in one way or another. Like to watch it.
Babadook
actually,
as well made me think of the scenes from. In fact, the Babadook
very much like Babadook
looks like he's sort of come out of an expressionist film, which I think was part of the idea. But
exactly.
So we asked the Facebook group. Johan Chipol says, "Seen it after almost a century, it is still moody and influential. The German expressionism allowed for the works of Lynch and Burton to exist, and it still works in my eyes." Andy CT says, "I wasn't aware of this film before the list/podcast. I trust Ben has put Mountain Rescue on standby. I'm guessing at least one bearded horror fan is about to take a dive off the cliffs of quality. Either that or about to debunk the cliff of quality theory and replace it with the Valley of Disinterest."
The Valley of Disinterest. I think that might be, it's because it's a bit mean to say it's my quality cliff, because who am I to judge what's good and bad, eh? I mean, I know I try to every week, but no.
Well,
it is almost like...
You've got to be honest, don't you? So, I mean, what... Well, we'll get to a grade, I suppose, afterwards. But I mean, in terms of you all have a bit of a quality cliff in terms of certain older things that are more difficult to watch. But I mean, how is it for you? Because I know you've got a particularly precipitous cliff.
We like to pretend that our quality cliff is a lot like further away than it actually is. I think a lot of us go, "Well, yeah, I watch something that's some avant-garde film from Ghana." But I think deep down all of us really just want to watch like Jumanji or
all the time
or like Die Hard.
If anyone ever says I fancy watching a film, they're always thinking Jumanji. Like every time.
I don't know about you, mate. Every week I put on The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and I go, "Well, sit down, strap yourself in, we're ready for it." I think it really does depend, because I think a lot of films from the 60s have got this kind of vibe that I can't get on board with. But then other films from the 60s don't feel like films from the 60s, essentially. It's almost like, I think we've discussed this before, like depending on what decade we were raised in and what films we watched growing up. Do you know what I mean? Because we've got no nostalgia for like films in the 60s, even really the 70s. We watched films like that really like later in life, so it's difficult to have any sort of level of nostalgia. So
it's still, I think it's when I was watching this, I still thought it's so weird that it's nearly 100 years old, it still felt like a little bit like time travel. Like just seeing the, it felt like watching moving daguerreotype, which is like a, like old style of photograph. But it's something really surreal about it. I think we were even getting a different quality from it than what people back in the day were getting from it when it was sort of.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was trying to put myself, in the position of somebody who had been watching this and it was brand new, and when all these things were like, so, do you know what I mean? So it was almost like it's really strange to think of something 100 years old. It's really strange and quite horrible to think of everyone involved as being long dead. I mean, that's.
This is going to sound kind of weird. So I was googling all of the people afterwards, like wonder what they got up to. Werner Krauss, the guy who plays Dr. Caligari, he died in like 59. So holy fuck, he's been dead for like 50 years. Like
he's been dead longer than
we've been alive. That's
he's been dead longer than we've been alive. Don't say that again, Luke. I'm having an existential crisis.
I got like super sad. I was like, how is that? Doesn't even make sense.
It's baffling. It's
film.
But what's almost interesting is to think that they made this film, and like, imagine making a film and thinking people are going to be watching it 100 years later. And talking of it as being like so, so inspiring to.
Well, it's weird because in literature, like prose books, we read old books all the time. Like, there's one, Franz Kafka. When I read Franz Kafka, I always read that, and that's like 1890 or something like that. I always read that and think it doesn't even read that old. It doesn't. It reads kind of like it's still relatable. And
he used a hashtag in the near the end. Hashtag,
yeah, but like there's part of you that kind of feels like I would be more comfortable if this didn't make any sense to me. And the same with this film, I'd be more comfortable if it was just like completely alien and
yeah, exactly. Like some of the way that sort of this text was laid out on screen, it just seems so casual in time at times. It almost felt like it's like, do people speak this in the 1920s? But then yes, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, but what and like the fonts, there's like what fonts on there? Like the main typing font, it looked like just a normal Helvetica sort of font, but maybe a little bit older.
Yeah, maybe that was added though. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of the
remaster.
Stuff, what was coming up? So when people were talking, what was the font for you?
It's like a really bog standard. Sans serif.
When people were talking on mine, it was like a hand drawn, handwritten, almost like, do you know, like the title font for this, where it's almost like
of that every now and again.
Odd angle. Yeah, that was what I had most of the time.
There's some special effects. Did you see the in your version? Did you have the Caligari later on in the story? Like the word Caligari starts popping up all over the screen.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Wow. Imagine that in 3D. Yeah.
I did watch it in 3D. I watched it in VR. I watched this whole film in VR.
You were in the film.
Wasn't it?
Okay, so should we? I don't know how much we can really talk about the story because I've got a feeling it's going to be a little bit different to the way we talk about like a John Carpenter film or something. I feel like this is just going to be kind of.
Yeah, I guess I guess we'll just try and go through it and see what we made of it, I guess, and how we sort of followed it.
Yeah. So key players, we've got Werner Krauss, who plays Dr. Caligari. No one knows. Conrad Veidt plays Caesar. I know I was pronouncing it Cesari in my mind. I don't know about you.
Yeah. I'm happy with either.
Okay. Caesar, it is. Friedrich Fehr plays Francis. Is he the main guy? I think he is. And then Lil Dagover plays Jane Olsen. She's in it a bit, don't worry. Too much.
Like Lil Dagover, that is a modern day rapper's name.
It is a Lil Dagover.
Okay, Lil Dagover.
Okay, so how did it start? So we've got a bit of a. It starts with Francis is on a bench, sat next to a guy with massive eyes. He looks like the guy who's in Nosferatu or. No, yeah. I recognize his face from
somewhere. Looks like a guy who's just constantly shocked about something. Mate, have you had some bad news?
Yeah.
Oh, don't ask. Don't ask, mate. Mortgage gone up.
Well, he says like something like, there's ghosts everywhere or something. And then Francis is like, yeah, whatever.
To be fair, if there's ghosts everywhere, your eyes would be like that as well.
Yeah. He's like, all right, listen up, dude. I've got a story to tell you. And then we I would say, so he says his fiance is walking around and she looks kind of like spooked as well. And then he goes, this is my fiance. shit got real bad. Let me tell you about it.
Shit got real bad, and now she's just left walking around in her nightie.
And then he bursts into like an 80s funky rap, Freshman's Bel-Air style song.
I was surprised by this in a silent film, a Fresh Prince's Bel-Air style rap.
Yeah.
Is that always the same thing?
Yeah, so then...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We jump back to like a little town. What's it called? Holstonwell or something like that.
Holstonwall.
So... Francis and he's got a mate called Alan. They both fancy this woman.
It's weird that he's got a mate called Alan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Big Al.
Oh, Big hi, Al. Alan. Yeah, he did. My friend Alan. It seems he's not my friend. My Alan. Mate Gary. Yeah.
Alan. Yeah. So obviously the town is like just this weird sort of, the set design is amazing. Well, obviously it's mainly like, I'm assuming like paintings and stuff. Loads of weird angled lines and stuff and shadows and it's pretty creepy.
It's like a charcoal drawing.
Like, yeah, it's like an abstract painting sort of come to life. Well, not really come to life, but...
Yeah, there's some bits where, like the chairs... There's like a super high chair for some reason. And, like, the doors are, like, triangle. There's, things... I don't know why. They did it on purpose? Like, making sort of odd angles and stuff?
Everything's a bit wonky and a bit bendy and odd. I mean, that sort of lends to the unnerving sort of sense of dread you've got running through the...
Yeah.
The film.
Yeah, so Francis and Alan, they both fancy this woman, and they're like, look, we'll both go after her. Whoever she likes, that's it. We'll be civil. Yeah,
I mean, there's no bad blood between these two guys.
No.
They've pretty much decided, look, we both want a piece.
Of that.
And if, you know, only one of us can have a piece. So if she bins one of us off, then we'll take it like a man, and we'll still be friends, he says. But I don't even think they're friends.
Not for long, anyway. So they go to... Oh yeah, there's a Dr. Caligari pops up and he's asking for a permit. This is weird when you think about the way the twist works, because it kind of makes all this stuff kind of not real. But so Dr. Caligari, he needs a permit, and it's kind of thing, if you were like kind of making this up in your mind, why would you make up him getting a permit? It's like the most boring detail. But
Well, there was a bit where Dr. Caligari had to do his taxes, and it took a while, but, you know, he stuck to it, and it took a few hours, but he did it. You have to do it in these things.
He got the AB form, and he started with that, and then went on to the BA6 form. But that was the wrong form.
Oh, no. Oh, fiddlesticks.
Yeah.
He had to go and get a new form to fill out again, in capital letters, in black ink only.
Yeah. So Dr. Caligari, he's... there's like a traveling show, circus type of deal sort of thing, rocking up in the little town. There's loads of people there. Again, it looks so weird because it looks like it's like just a photograph that's moving, and it's like people moving in and out of it. And the way they sort of do these perspective tricks are just like people going up and down like levels. So it tricks your mind really strange. Dr. Caligari has got a somnambulist, which I always thought just meant sleepwalking.
Have you practiced saying that word? Because I really struggle with it.
Well, I it's a word I've looked at. I know of this word. I've used it a couple of times
before. You've been practiced. You've used it a couple of times. In what context?
Well, I think when I was at uni, I used to, because I was like, I always thought I had like a really like shitty, you know, the word that means you know a lot of words.
Yeah.
So I used to do like a word of the day, and I'd get like a new word of the day, and I'd write it on the wall and what it meant. And somnambulism was one of them. But it's one of those ones where I kind of forgot it for a long time until I saw this.
So hey guys, check this out. Somnambulist, yeah, okay. Judge me on that. All right.
Those
okay.
words are funny because they never really came up in any conversation ever.
No, I wasn't even sure what it
until
was.
Until now.
Until now. Yes, wonderful. I finally get a chance to use it.
But even now, like when it came up, I was like, "That's not what I understand somnambulism to be." Because it's just a dude who is like always asleep. Like Dr. Caligari is like, look. Guys, come and see this strange
lazy
guy.
Bastard.
I know, yeah. He's been asleep for 25 years. He's about to wake up. And then this somnambulist wakes up. It's called Cesare, whatever. He looks like kind of a Tim Burton-esque sort of... I imagine Johnny Depp would play him.
Yeah, someone at a Corpse Bride. To be fair, if you wake up after 25 years, you'd be, well, what the fuck is going on? But he seems to just wake up and go, hello.
Also, and then he goes, ask Cesare a question, and he'll tell you when you'll die or something.
Like, yeah, why? But basically, they say, ask it any question.
Oh, right, okay.
But for some reason, dude, was it Alan or was it Francis? It was Alan, wasn't it? Alan.
Yeah.
For some reason, Alan goes, how long will I live? It's like, of all the questions you're going to ask it, what's the lottery numbers this week then, Cesare? Come on then, sort me out.
Or he can ask the girl, like, what should I say to, like, you know, win her heart? Like, what pickup line? What pickup line should I use?
And he go, ooh, does this touch, get her to touch a little bit of your jumper and then say, does that feel like boyfriend material to you? Yeah, it's really good there. Thanks, somnambulist man.
Yeah. But anyway, so he asks the somnambulist, Caesar, when will I die? And he goes, you haven't got long left. I'm afraid you will die by dawn.
Pretty much, he doesn't say it like that. He just he goes, you'll die by dawn, you mug. That's it, have it.
Yeah. So he's like doing this, like calling it, like giving him the finger and stuff. And then it cuts to the text. He goes, well, I'm sorry, my friend. You will die by dawn.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah. You will die by dawn.
So the next morning, Alan's dead.
Well, later that night, isn't it?
Is it later that night? Okay.
Yeah, later that night. You see. So a figure breaks into Alan's home and stabs him to death in his bed. But he kind of like just sees a shadow on the wall. Then he's like, "What the hell is that?
Yeah,
it's a shadow on the wall." And then he's dead.
Yeah.
Stabbed to death by a shadow.
Yeah. So the next day, Francis, from here on out, Francis wears the same like face, like constantly shocked, looking around, doing this kind of like floppy head thing. Yeah. He's like really acting the role. Most of them are. I actually quite like just watching Dr. Caligari. He's got like a, I don't know, he's got a Mad Eye Moody sort of thing going on. Like, he's got like painted on, wrinkles and stuff. Yeah. They just look like he's like,
you know, it's like they couldn't get a makeup artist in, so they just got in like just some nut
with a Sharpie.
With a Sharpie,
yeah. So what happens there?
Francis and his crew. He rounds up a little crew. He's got like Jane and her father, and they obtain police authorization to investigate the somnambulism, and they find this dude. He was like a bit of an odd dude. He kind of looks a little bit like Angelos Epifemou from Shooting Stars. Do you remember that? And the guy's just like in the possession of a knife. He gets caught trying to murder some woman.
Yeah.
And then the police and everyone, they question him. And he goes like, well, I was trying to kill that woman, but I was only doing it because there was other deaths happening. So I thought I'd take advantage of the situation.
In that scene where they're talking to him, interrogating him, whatever. Like, one of the policemen is like holding a knife, looking at it, doing this, like shaking up and down. There's about 11 other policemen, and they're just going, just nodding like, really vigorously. And they just don't stop nodding until the scene. There's a lot of like, in your version, every single cut for me was like, like a dilating sort of iris sort of thing.
Yeah. Had that as well. And I kept thinking that was poignant. It was like zooming in on the right person at the right time. But then I felt like it just kept happening at random times in random places.
Someone had like just went too crazy with it. I would have liked some normal cuts. Maybe they couldn't do that. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe someone would have realised that, you know, learn how to do this. Do it every cut.
So what happens now? So Francis goes to spy on Dr. Caligari. He spots Caesar in his little coffin box thing.
Yeah.
And in the same, oh yeah, so this is when, like, I've seen this scene before where Caesar sneaks into Jane's bedroom. So yeah. I remember at music college, they gave us that scene and we had to put our own score to it.
Very nice.
It's quite a nice little thing.
What did you do? Level 42 star slap bass?
I really can't remember. I think I just did some little piano jabs and stuff. I have no idea. I can't remember.
That's not funny, but I like
that. I was about 16 or something. It's a long time ago.
Piano jabs.
But yeah, so he goes in. Caesar sort of goes in super creepy now. He's got like a creepy black face. That sounds pretty racist.
He does a little bit of creepy black face. You know, you should never do that. Never do creepy black face.
He, there's like a struggle. He gets Jane, takes her outside onto the rooftops. The rooftops, I think that's maybe my favorite visual. Yeah. The way they're sort of angled is so incredibly odd. I don't understand how he's like walking up them and disappearing behind one. Doesn't really make any sense.
I mean, it was a bit strange being there. Yeah. What was he wearing as well, this Cesare? What would you say, a leotard?
Like a parkour sort of ninja suit.
Ninja suit, yeah. Because you'd be like, if he's been asleep in that for 25 years, I mean,
Maybe he wasn't wearing anything. Maybe that was his skin. Black.
His skin was black as the night, and his head was
baggy.
And he's got a little Lloyd Christmas style bowl cut on his head as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. I would like to see Jim Carrey play this role when they do the remake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't it. Hopefully that remake's coming out soon.
Yeah. So he sees it, takes the girl, only gets so far and drops her because he's chased by a load of old men in their pyjamas.
yeah.
These old men chase him for a while. And then he, I don't know what happens to him, actually. He just disappears. And then he sort of
I think that they're not. He collapses and dies, doesn't he, Cesare?
Doesn't last long. Well, he's been asleep. Yeah, it's a long time.
He's been asleep, and then he's getting up, and he's doing all these physical exercise.
Got excited,
and he's running about. He got excited. His heart's usually in sleeping state. You know, he's not used to all this, so he has a heart attack and dies probably.
Yeah. So then I think Francis. So what did they do here? They go to Francis says, "Come, it can't be Dr. Caligari because I saw Caesar napping in the coffin."
Yeah.
But then they go, they see it's a dummy, and it's quite obviously like this ludicrous dummy.
It's just a dummy that he's gone and got from Top Man and just slung it in there. To be fair, what he was wearing, you'd probably see in Top Man, and someone would pay top dollar.
Yeah, he did look a bit like a model, yeah. He looked like a singer from a Manchester-era band, but on the more gothic side of it.
Like it was like a cross between The Cure and like Stone Roses.
Yeah, exactly. So while they're like looking at the dummy going, this isn't the real thing, this is the dummy, Dr. Caligari runs away. They chase him. And then what? Francis sees him go into the asylum.
He just escapes and then goes into the entrance of an insane asylum. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So and then Francis goes in and says, "Look, you need to help me find Dr. Caligari." They say, "No, there's no one here by that name," or something, or they say, "That's the name of the." I don't know if this really makes sense. That makes sense. But anyway, Dr. Caligari is basically the asylum director. He's like the person in charge of the asylum.
To
go up to his office, start looking for his paper. We got a bit of a flashback scene here. He is obsessed with this other doctor called Dr. Caligari, who got a somnambulist to commit these murders for him.
Where'd you get a somnambulist? I could really do with getting a somnambulist to commit some murders. I'll just go down the local somnambulist dealership and find.
I don't really know. What is it like? He just needs a sleeping guy. I need a just guy who's like always asleep, but then like tells the future when you ask him questions.
And we'll wake up when I want him to go and do a murder.
That's all. What's the point? That's all. Is I ask. Like, those three criteria.
Yeah. Well, we've got one person in the history of the world who's ever been like that. Well, yeah. I'll take him. I'll take him right now. It is a little bit nuts.
But you get, yeah. So I think he kind of decides that he wants to become Dr. Caligari. So maybe he names himself that. A guy turns up who is a somnambulist and decides to use him. So we get the idea that Dr. Caligari has basically taken one of his patients and has decided to relive the life of Dr. Caligari and get like to kill murders and stuff.
A weird life to want to relive with someone. You know what I mean? Whose life are you going to relive? You're going to relive like anyone, but this guy who just keeps a half asleep man and gets him to do his murders.
And then there's a bit when he's like walking down the road or something, and he's deciding he's going to be Dr. Caligari. That's when you get the special effects. Like the word Caligari starts popping up all over the screen. I wonder how long that special effect took them to do. I don't even know how they would have done it. But
well, all they would have done, mate, they would have loaded up After Effects, Adobe After Effects.
Popped on a preset,
and it was done. You know what I mean? Yeah. No, probably a lot of effort would have gone into that, hand drawn on each cell or whatever. I mean, it was.
Yeah, would have been like rotoscoped, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're coming towards the end. This is where the shit hits the fan. They kind of confront Dr. Caligari, and he goes, I am Dr. Caligari. And they sort of wrap a straitjacket around him, throw him in this little cell. And then we go back to present day. Is that right?
Yeah, and then it kind of comes back to present day, where obviously the film started with Francis on the bench. And then there's a bit of a twist at the end, isn't there, Mr. Quandor?
You're trying to remember how it worked. So he saw this guy, this big story. And then you look across, and basically they're in a big mental, they're in the mental asylum from the story, but they're in like the playground part of it, the quad. There's people walking around.
And then
you see Caesar.
He's there. He's there knocking about. He's doing something weird with like a, what's he doing? He's holding something like a weird little thing.
Then he talks to Jane and says, "When will you marry me?" And she's insane as well. She thinks she's like a queen or like royalty or something.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Caligari comes down, and he's actually is the asylum director. I feel like this is a double twist ending. Dr. Caligari is actually the asylum director, and then then the same thing happens to Francis. They put him in the straitjacket and then put him in the cell that Dr. Caligari was in the thingy, and then it ends. I think it's a bit of a weird one. But
and then Dr. Caligari, well, the director says he's confident that he can cure Francis, almost like perhaps a lot of what we've seen for like the was actually just in his mind, possibly.
Oh well, I think that's the idea, isn't it? So it was all just in his mind.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of ending you get away with now.
I don't know. Stuff still tries to do that, I think.
Yeah.
It was all in your mind. I mean, that was thought of as quite a...
This is like Shutter Island. This is like the prequel to Shutter Island.
This is basically Shutter Island, yeah. Yeah. I did think that. I felt a little bit like it. I mean, I think I saw Leonardo DiCaprio knocking about in the background as well. Because as we know, he's ageless. He's a vampire.
Nicolas Cage as well.
Keanu Reeves is a vampire. It's not just because he was in Dracula, but I mean, Keanu Reeves, if you see him, then age, mate.
That is true. Okay, so that's the film. The trivia, are you ready?
Oh, I'm definitely ready for some Caligari trivia.
Okay, number one, the leading actors, as in Werner Krauss, was paid $30 a day to be on the film.
God.
That actually sounds quite good. That sounds quite good even like today, like
yeah.
£30 a day for.
Well, I'll have to go down to the Bureau Exchange, whatever it's called, to get a sort. True.
It's true. Number two. Years later, after this film came out, we got a sequel in the form of The Indian in the Cupboard. And then third sequel, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, laying the groundwork for connected cinematic universes now used by Marvel and DC. True or false?
I'm so confused. if that is false, which I'm thinking it is, that's some strange films to choose.
Well, there's the it's like all furniture based films, aren't they? It's the furniture universe. It's the
oh my god, yeah.
I literally made no connection between anything you said.
The Indian in the Cupboard. Oh. You're like, they're just random words.
Well, it could be anything. Just any films. I mean, like The Table.
It's the IKEA trilogy.
It's the IKEA trilogy. That's false, unfortunately, isn't it? But I mean, I'm really upset.
Yeah.
I'm really upset that it is. Because a lot went into that and it went over my head. So I'm sorry, Luke, for not giving it.
As much went into that as you think. Okay, number three, Werner Krauss, who played the Doctor, was a Nazi. True or false?
True.
It's true, yeah. He had to go through a period of denazification after the war. Which is kind of weird because, what they say the film is about dictatorship, about using some, like, sleeping people to do your evil bidding sort of thing. Apparently no one would go to his plays for a long time. No one would go to...
He
got boycotted for many years and then eventually
died. So he
went
through a process of denazification. I mean, that's just the end of the day for you, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, before I go to bed, I have to go through a quick process of, like... Because I built, like, a certain Jew hate throughout the day. I need to get, like, a shower. No, I don't mind Jews. I don't really know any. Okay, so number four. This film introduced the technique of the twist ending in the language of narrative film.
Sure, of course it did. Yes.
Well, apparently, I don't know if that's true. It does say it on Wikipedia.
It's not as good as the twist ending in 1901's The Sixth Sense. I mean, that's much better.
That came out in 1901? Wow. Okay.
News to you.
One of the writers, Carl Mayer, feigned madness to avoid military service.
Yes, true.
Which led him to intense examinations from a military psychiatrist. The experience left him distrustful of authority. Apparently it played into why he wrote the film, because he always distrusted people telling him what to do and all that. Don't tell me what to do.
Oh, distrusting people, are you? The man who lied about being... we should trust you, should we? Man who lied.
About being mad. Wow. You should never lie about being mad. There's a guy. Have you read?
What if he meant I'm mad for it, not mad. Just like I'm lying that I'm mad for it.
He could it because he was from the Manchester 1990s Manchester scene. Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you there.
You should never lie about being mad. Have you read a psychopath test? There's the guy who was basically saying he committed murder. He claims to be mad because he did the murder. And he said he's not actually mad, but no one will believe him anymore. They won't let him leave to go like a normal. So I think if he was done for murder, he would have been would have let go. But because he's like this is many years later. This is like 30, 40 years later. And he's still stuck in the mental asylum, and they won't believe him that he's not mad. Don't do that, dude. We need to grade the film.
We do need to grade the film.
This is a difficult one to grade, I think.
Yeah,
Rotten Tomatoes are playing it. He's safe.
Rotten Tomatoes, bunch of bloody nobodies.
Nazis.
I think going for like my enjoyment of the film, I'd be happy to stick at a C. I don't think I want to go any too much higher than that. I mean, again, when we come to films like this, I completely respect everything it does and the fact that obviously it was seminal. It was a very important piece of film, especially it was like 1920. So that's insane. But at the same time. Just for my enjoyment of the film, I think a C is as high as I'm willing to go on this.
Yeah, I agree. I struggled. I mean, it's better than I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought it was going to.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's not quite The Raid. I don't know, it's good. I was struggling. I think I'm going to go with a C+. I was thinking B-, but that seems a little bit high compared to like the other films at the B- level that I've watched and I really kind of enjoyed. It's good. Yeah. I understand its place on this list.
Yeah.
I don't know if it necessarily needs to be this high. I don't know.
I mean, it's not better than American Werewolf in London, is it?
No, exactly. Yeah. But okay, so the next film, I think we're going to do one more after this and then do a Christmas special. I think that should time it about right.
So what? So say so if this episode's on the 7th of December, 14th, and then on the 21st, we'll do a Christmas Bad Boy, I assume,
yeah,
yes.
That sounds right, yeah. Okay, so that means the next one is going to be Ring 2. I've not seen The Ring in a long time.
So I need to confirm this with you before we watch it. So it's the Japanese Ring, yes?
Yeah.
As in Ringu, but yeah. It's Ringu 2. What I'm confused about by this was that I was looking at sort of like the IMDb and the Rotten Tomatoes scores for Ring 2, yeah. And it's considerably low compared to Ringu. So why have they not just included Ringu on this film?
Why would you put Ring 2 on it? Let's have a quick look at what they say about it.
Yeah. So I was going to suggest something to you. I'm going to suggest it live on the podcast. Just so I'm really putting you in a place. Would you be up for watching both Ringu and Ringu 2?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to.
And then potentially doing a double whammy episode where we discuss both.
Yeah. Wow, it's weird. IMDb, Ring 2, like 5.4.
Yeah, I know. So what's going on there? It's almost like they've done it wrong. Like our best buds at Empire have included the wrong one. They've included Ringu instead of Ring 2. But then when you click on the link on the Empire website...
That's what I'm doing, yeah.
It goes to Ring 2.
Well, weird. I've just realised Nosferatu is coming up on the list later on. 1922 came out. Yeah, how odd.
Very odd. So fair enough. If you're games, you watch Ringu and Ringu 2, and then Ringu 2 do you. New?
sure, yeah.
There's something considerably wrong with me this evening, sorry.
No, that's cool. Don't worry. You have to go through the denazification process before bedtime. So,
yeah, every day.
This show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Go and patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Go join the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. Give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. And remember to hit subscribe. And thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude.
Why, thank you, Luke. It's been a pleasure as always.
Nice. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. acast.com.